My audiobooks.ai presents The First License to Build a Star. What Fusion's first business permit actually means. Sometime in the first week of September 2026, in a state office in Tennessee, a regulator signed a document that had never existed before. The first license in the United States for a commercial nuclear fusion project. The recipient was a company called Type 1 Energy, and the license covers a prototype fusion device called Project Infinity to be built on the grounds of a decommissioned coal-fired power plant near Oak Ridge, the city that uranium built, with operations targeted around 2034. The signature is not a breakthrough in physics. It does not prove that fusion power works, that it will be economical, or that Type 1's machine will ever light a bulb. What it proves is that the fusion industry has crossed an invisible border that separates two eras. The era when fusion was a science project, evaluated in laboratories and measured in journal citations, and the era when fusion is a construction project, evaluated by regulators and measured in permits, licenses, and grid interconnection agreements. The paperwork has begun. And the question this article asks is what it means that the paperwork has begun before the physics is finished.
For 70 years, fusion has been the energy technology that is always 30 years away. And the joke has been true enough to hurt. The physics of the sun, fusing hydrogen into helium and harvesting the energy released when a little mass turns into a lot of it, the same reaction that powers every star, has been understood since the 1920s. Recreating it on Earth means holding a gas at 100 million degrees, hotter than the core of the sun, in a bottle made of magnetic fields, long enough and cleanly enough that the reaction feeds on itself and produces more energy than it takes to run the bottle. For most of those 70 years, the honest summary was simple. The bottle leaked. The plasma wriggled, cooled, touched the walls, and died. The reaction never paid its own electricity bill.
The field's insiders had their own gallows humor for it. Fusion energy is the technology of the future. And always will be.
What changed, and this is the part that makes the Tennessee signature possible at all, is that in the last 4 years, the bottle started holding. In December of 2022, the National Ignition Facility in California, the largest laser array ever built, achieved ignition for the first time, a fusion reaction that released more energy than the laser energy delivered to the fuel capsule. In April of 2025, NIF set the standing record, 8.6 megajoules of fusion yield from 2.08 megajoules of laser energy on target, a target gain of 4.13, meaning the reaction returned four times the energy the lasers put in. By June of 2026, NIF had repeated ignition 10 more times, and the National Lab is no longer alone. In February of 2026, a private company called Helion announced that its Polaris prototype had become the first privately developed machine to demonstrate measurable deuterium-tritium fusion, the hardest, most energetic kind, at plasma temperatures of 150 million degrees. Another private firm, Pacific Fusion, broke ground on a billion-dollar pulsed power facility in New Mexico, targeting 100 megajoules per pulse by 2030.
Helion's machine deserves its own note, because it is the outlier in the pack. Rather than a steady magnetic bottle, Polaris is a pulsed device that forms the plasma in one end, slams two clouds of it together at millions of miles per hour, and attempts to harvest the electricity directly from the reaction's expanding magnetic field. No steam cycle, no turbine, no boiling water at all. If it works, it skips the entire thermal plumbing that every other power plant on Earth is built around. If it doesn't, it is the most expensive physics demonstration in Washington state. That is the honest spread of the current field. Lasers, magnets, pulses, steam, and no steam, all converging on the same decade.
A third, Longview,
is building a commercial plant on NIF's demonstrated laser physics for 2033. The science stopped being 30 years away and started being next decade's engineering problem. The question the Tennessee license forces is whether engineering problem and power plant are the same thing. They are not. And the distance between them is the entire story.
At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library. The distance has a name, and it is the number the fusion industry least likes to say out loud. Wall plug efficiency. Total energy out of the plant divided by total energy drawn from the grid to run it. A real power plant must clear one. Nothing built yet has come anywhere near it. The number that makes headlines instead is target gain. The energy the reaction produces measured against the energy delivered directly to the fuel capsule. That is the record NIF keeps breaking. 4.13 at the standing peak, and it is a genuine historic measurement. But it is a measurement of the target, not the plant. Because the laser that delivers those 2 megajoules does not run on 2 megajoules of wall power, NIF's laser system consumes on the order of 300 megajoules of electricity from the grid to put those 2 megajoules of light on the capsule. Read that again, because it is the whole game. The reaction returns 4 times what the laser gives the fuel, and the laser eats 150 times what it gives the fuel. The reaction is a triumph. The power plant, measured from the wall socket, is a rounding error. And that is what ignition, the word that launched 1,000 headlines, actually certifies. The fuel gave back more than the beam put in. For all its genuine, historic weight, it is the Wright brothers' 12 seconds at Kitty Hawk. It proves the machine can leave the ground and says nothing yet about carrying passengers.
This is why the approach a company takes matters as much as its press releases, and why Type 1 Energy's license is for a particular kind of machine. The 2 great families of magnetic fusion bottles are the Tokamak and the Stellarator. The Tokamak is the simpler, older design, a donut of plasma held in place partly by external magnets and partly by a current driven through the plasma itself. It dominates the field, including the giant international ITER project, and its weakness is that the internal current makes it inherently pulsed and twitchy.
The Stellarator is the Tokamak's strange cousin. It holds the plasma entirely with intricately shaped external magnetic coils, no internal current required, which makes the machine fiendishly hard to design and build. The coils look like something a surrealist would forge, but inherently steady and well-behaved once running, capable of operating continuously rather than in pulses. A power plant that must run around the clock for decades favors the hard-to-build, easy-to-run architecture. Type 1 is a Stellarator company. The license Tennessee issued is not a bet that fusion works today. It is a bet that the architecture worth permitting for tomorrow is the one designed to run forever. The Tokamak branch of the family is worth its own paragraph because it carries the field's biggest lesson, and its name is ITER. 35 nations pooled their money in 2006 to build the largest tokamak ever attempted in the south of France, with first plasma promised for 2016. The project is now expected to fire in the late 2030s at more than $20 billion and counting, and its history is the definitive proof of what fusion's critics have always said. The physics is soluble, the engineering is murderous, and the timeline is a polite fiction. ITER's defenders reply that the machine was never meant to make power. It is an experiment to prove that a burning plasma can be sustained, the last scientific question on the list.
Both things are true at once, and both are why the private companies now racing ahead chose smaller, faster, stranger machines. The lesson they took from ITER is that the biggest machine is not the fastest way to a power plant.
And the fastest way is the only way that matters when the century's demand for firm, clean power is doubling underneath you.
And the license itself deserves precision, because first commercial fusion license sounds like more than it is, and the honest scoping is part of this article's job. The license is a state license issued by Tennessee for a prototype device, not an operating power plant selling electricity to the grid. Fusion is regulated differently from fission. After years of deliberation, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission decided that fusion facilities would be overseen under the lighter framework used for byproduct materials, rather than the full reactor licensing regime that governs fission plants. And much of the actual licensing happens through agreement states, Tennessee among them, that run those frameworks locally. This matters for two reasons.
It means the regulatory path for fusion is genuinely easier than the decades-long gauntlet fission plants face, which is part of why the license arrived now. And it means the milestone is real, but modest. A regulator has agreed that a company may build a prototype fusion device at a specific site. It is not proof of electrons. It is proof of an address. And in the history of energy technologies, the moment a technology gets a legal address is the moment its promises start carrying penalties for being late.
The framework deserves one more sentence of precision, because lighter does not mean absent. Fusion devices still produce radiation, neutron flux that activates the machine's own structure, tritium inventories that must be accounted for gram by gram. So the prototype will be monitored, inspected, and required to report like any licensed nuclear facility. What it skips is the years-long reactor design certification and the statutory public hearing gauntlet that has added billions to every fission plant built this century. The state's wager is calibrated to that difference. Regulate the radiation that exists now, not the reactor that might exist someday.
At myaudiobooks.ai, you can listen to this story and thousands of others that explore the hidden science and mechanics behind the headlines. It is also worth asking why the money arrived now, because the answer is only partly the physics. Three forces converged in the last 4 years. First, ignition itself. Once the National Lab proved the reaction could pay the target's bill, the question shifted from, is this real, to who builds it? And venture capital prefers engineering risk to existential risk. Second, the electricity crunch. The artificial intelligence build-out is consuming power faster than grids can add it, and a firm that can credibly promise firm, carbon-free, always-on power is promising the single most valuable commodity of the decade. Fusion's investment pitch is in large part the data center pitch. Third,
the opening in regulation. The decision to route fusion through the lighter materials framework rather than the full reactor gauntlet collapsed the licensing timeline from a generation to a project cycle. And capital can finally see a path from checkbook to switch on. The physics got the headlines. The regulatory and demand shifts got the term sheets. All three had to happen for a state office to be signing a license this week.
The strongest case against the fusion moment deserves a full hearing, because 70 years of evidence is on its side. Every previous fusion timeline has slipped. The 1950s promised commercial power in 20 years. The 90s promised it in 30. ITER, begun in 2006 with first plasma in 2016, now targets the late 2030s and has consumed over $20 billion from 35 nations. The physics is proven at the target, unproven at the wall. The engineering is unproven everywhere.
Tritium, the radioactive hydrogen isotope the easiest fusion reactions require, does not exist in commercial quantities anywhere on Earth. And no one has yet built a blanket that breeds it from lithium at scale, which means every deuterium-tritium plant ever proposed depends on a fuel supply chain that does not exist.
The fuel physics is worth a minute because it explains why everyone uses tritium despite the headache. Deuterium is abundant. It is in every glass of water. Tritium is the opposite. Rare, radioactive, decaying by half every 12 years, produced today only as a byproduct of a handful of heavy water fission reactors at a price per gram that would make a gold trader blush.
But fuse the two, and you get the easiest ignition in fusion. The reaction that lights at the lowest temperature and the highest rate. The one NIF and helion and every first-generation design depends on. The escape hatch is supposed to be the breeding blanket. A shell of lithium around the reaction chamber that absorbs the fusion neutrons and transmutes into fresh tritium, making the plant its own fuel factory. On paper, it is elegant. In hardware, no one has ever run one at scale. Not at ITER's scale, not at anyone's. And until someone does, every DT power plant on every slide deck is a car designed around a fuel that nobody sells.
The private fusion boom is capitalized at tens of billions on the strength of narratives, and energy history is littered with technologies that absorbed fortunes on the strength of a prototype that never became a product. And the license itself on this reading is marketing. A state regulator with a light-touch framework signing a permit for a prototype at a site chosen for its symbolism, timed to a funding cycle. Fusion has had decades of moments like this, the skeptics say, and the grid has noticed none of them.
The strongest case for the moment is that the category of the news has changed. For 70 years, fusion news was physics news. Records and journals reviewed by scientists. The Tennessee signature is administrative news. A regulator, a site, a company, a date. Technologies cross into existence not when the journal records them, but when the paperwork starts. When someone has to answer to a permit, a grid operator, a ratepayer, and a calendar. The physics has a track record now, not a promise. 11 ignitions at the National Lab, a private machine at 150 million degrees, capital and sites and licenses converging. None of that guarantees a what. All of it is new. The last time the category shifted like this, the technology was the commercial internet. Three developments would disprove the skeptics, or the believers, and each has a date attached. First, net facility gain. If any device, private or public, demonstrates total energy out greater than total energy in from the wall plug, even briefly, the 70-year joke dies on the spot, and the industry's timeline compresses from decades to years. The closer anyone gets without crossing, the clearer the true distance becomes. Second, tritium. If a working breeding blanket produces tritium from lithium at demonstration scale, the fuel chain objection collapses. If it remains a diagram through the late 20s, the deuterium-tritium roadmap is a dead end, and the field pivots to harder fuels or fizzles.
Third, Project Infinity itself. If the Tennessee prototype is built on schedule and runs, the licensing era is real, and every state and utility in the country starts writing its own fusion playbook. If the site quietly slips past 2034 with concrete unpoured, this week becomes one more entry in the long chronicle of fusion's false dawns, and the joke gets another decade.
It is worth saying what this article has not claimed. It has not claimed fusion power works. It has claimed the reaction ignites at the target, and the wall plug math is nowhere close, and it has given both numbers. It has not claimed the Tennessee license is a power plant. It is a state prototype license in a light touch framework, described here at its true scale. It has not claimed the Stellarator is proven superior. It is the architecture favored by continuous operation. And the trade-off, harder to build, easier to run, is stated as a trade-off, not a verdict.
And it has not claimed the 70-year joke is over. It has claimed the joke changed categories this month, from a physics joke
to an engineering and permits question, which is a different thing, and for the first time in decades, a more answerable one. Which returns to the signature in the state office, on the grounds of a dead coal plant in the city that Uranium built. The last time Oak Ridge changed American energy, it was building the fuel for the fission age in secret, and the country spent the next 80 years living inside the consequences. This time, the paperwork is public. The fuel is the isotope of water, and the promise is a star in a bottle instead of a fire in a pile. The license does not say the star will light the grid by 2034. It says a regulator now expects someone to try, on a specific site, by a specific date, under rules that now exist, and inspectors who will actually visit. For 70 years, fusion lived in the future tense.
This month, it acquired a street address, a docket number, and a deadline. And the future, at last, has paperwork. The next decade belongs to the people who grade the paperwork.
At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create fiction, nonfiction, and turn your documents into audio, all stored in one place with a single subscription. Plus, get instant access to thousands of audiobooks and deep dive investigations. Learn more today at myaudiobooks.ai. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.